Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, I'm Casey Luskin, and I'd like to give you a brief introduction to the first of this week's three podcasts celebrating upcoming Academic Freedom Day this Friday on February 12th. February 12th used to be universally recognized as Abraham Lincoln's birthday, the day that we celebrated the accomplishments of a great president who helped free the slaves and started our nation on a path towards racial equality. However, in the past few years, some have started to rebrand February 12th as Darwin Day, instead celebrating the birthday of Charles Darwin, the founder of the modern theory of evolution. I'm not aware of any other scientist whose birthday is celebrated with all the glamour and fanfare of Darwin's. In fact, I'm not aware of any other scientist whose birthday is widely celebrated at all. We here at the Discovery Institute feel that there's nothing wrong with celebrating Darwin's birthday if that's really what you want to do. After all, Darwin did make some good points, particularly his view that a fair result can be obtained only by fully stating and balancing the facts and arguments on both sides of each question. Unfortunately, in recent years, Darwin's name has become increasingly associated with attacks on academic freedom. Last year, while the media was going ape over Darwin's 200th birthday, we decided to reclaim February 12th for those who love freedom by calling it Academic Freedom Day. This year in 2010, it's the second annual Academic Freedom Day, and as part of our celebration, we're going to be releasing three podcasts this week that highlight important academic freedom events and issues from 2009, as well as ongoing issues here in 2010. Today's first podcast of Academic Freedom Week features part one of an interview with Dennis Wagner, Executive Director of the Access Research Network, discussing some of the top 10 Darwin and Design media stories from 2009, many of which reflect incidents where intellectual freedom and freedom of speech were taken away from ID proponents and the pro-ID viewpoint. Wednesday's podcast will continue the discussion with Mr. Wagner by discussing some successes in the battle to protect academic freedom and evolution education. Finally, Friday's podcast will give a summary and update of the lawsuits against the California Science Center due to its breach of contract and violation of the freedom of speech rights of the American Freedom Alliance when canceling the group's contract to screen a pro-ID video at the publicly operated museum. Academic Freedom Day started last year. For more information on Academic Freedom Day, visit www.academicfreedomday.com. Hello and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. We have on the show with us again today Dennis Wagner, Executive Director of the Access Research Network. Access Research Network is a great intelligent design organization. They have a website, arn.org, that probably has the largest online store where you can purchase ID resources. And they're a 501c3 nonprofit dedicated to educating the public about information on science, technology, and society issues from an intelligent design perspective. So, Dennis, thanks for coming on the show with us again.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Casey.
We had you on a couple weeks ago talking about the top Darwin and Design science stories from 2009, and now ARN has compiled the top Darwin and Design media news stories for 2009, and we'd like to go over those today. So before we get started, can you explain to our listeners what is the difference for you between the top Darwin and Design science stories and the top Darwin and Design media news stories?
Well, when we started doing these lists back in 2006, we just had one top 10 stories list, and it included science stories, public policy stories, resources, and what we found over the years is there's just more news stories in each category, so we broke them out into separate lists, and we did the top 10 science news stories. Those things are usually reported on in the scientific literature as the first list. This one we call the media news stories, and those are typically public policy or cultural issues. How does this Darwin or Design controversy affect the public, not necessarily what's going on in the science evidence and research itself? And so those things tend to be, laws that are passed or discrimination issues, viewpoint discrimination issues. The Darwin Bicentennial was last year. That was a big public type of a media event. So those are the kinds of stories that we'll report on this list.
Well, great, Dennis. And I want to remind our listeners that you guys compile the top 10 science and media stories for the ID debate every year at your website, and the URL for those top 10 lists, I believe, is arn.org/top10. That's /top10. And so our listeners can go and check that out. I'm going to make one other point that we may be getting into the month of February here, but it's not too late to talk about the top 10 Darwin and Design media stories for 2009. These are ongoing stories, some of them actually, and they're stories that we'll probably be following into the year of 2010 as well. And heck, I just got a Christmas card from a friend yesterday in the mail. So I figure it's definitely not too late to revisit the great things that happened over the year 2009.
Oh, definitely. It's always a different perspective when you look back on a whole year. And, you know, now that we're a little bit past 2009, I think we can look back and say, what were the key events that happened last year that were defining events in this debate?
Great. Well, let's start with your number 10 Darwin and Design media story for 2009, which was that evolutionary psychology finally comes under media attack. And boy, am I glad to see this story. There have been so many articles that have just been fawning over these just-so stories from evolutionary psychology in the media. This has been happening for years. So what changed in 2009? Why did the media suddenly start treating evolutionary psychology like a news story rather than a gospel that must be preached to the public?
Back in the 1980s, this whole field used to be called social biology, and then it kind of changed in the last decade or two in evolutionary psychology, and it's basically justification for any behavior that you want to try to explain in humans today and trying to dream up a possible cause in the past and linking them through evolutionary psychology. And so those links are very imaginative and full of speculation about human psychology, and a lot of it's based on what our remote ancestors supposedly did or did not do. And of course, they're going back to, you know, supposedly the caveman era, and we didn't have a lot of records back then. So it's got to be all speculation because we don't know what people did back then. And yet they're coming out with theories of why women like to shop or why men rape and all those kinds of things and linking it back to some inherited trait from our ancestors, which there's absolutely no evidence for.
Some of the studies that they fund are just absolutely trivial things, like why men find women attractive. And
right.
I want to make a point also here, Dennis, that before evolutionary psychology, as you noted, there was social biology. And before that, there was eugenics. And actually, you can see the evolution of evolutionary psychology, if you want to call it that. The American Eugenics Society, which was founded in 1922, changed its name in 1972 to gain respectability to the Society for the Study of Social Biology. And then now we don't hear about sociobiology quite as much. It's more called evolutionary psychology. And it has some very interesting roots. Of course, they don't necessarily advocate eugenics anymore, but it's interesting to see how this field has evolved over the years.
Yeah, and we were just really glad this year to see there was an article in the June 29th issue of Newsweek by Sharon Beagley, and that same month in the New York Times by David Brooks, an op-ed piece, and they were just finally laughing at the absurdity of some of these, you know, new books and new analysis that were coming out, trying to either justify or explain people's behavior based on something that's totally unrelated to anything we know about.
Great. Well, thanks, Dennis. Well, let's go into the number 9 story, and that was that Ben Stein was expelled from the University of Vermont. Can you tell us what happened with this story last year?
Well, what's so ironic about this is, you know, Ben Stein was the one that hosted the movie Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, where he went around and showed, you know, evidence of viewpoint discrimination for those people that challenged Darwinism. And he got a lot of notoriety for that, and he had been invited to be the commencement speaker at the University of Vermont, and I guess the president of Vermont there, Daniel Fogel, got some flack for that and basically uninvited him. And in a press release, he said it was because of his highly controversial views about evolutionary theory, intelligent design, the role of science in the Holocaust, which is just crazy because they've had all sorts of people for their commencement speakers in past years that have had different viewpoints on things, far-left activists, and you know, those types of things. So to me, this is really academic doublespeak, and there's several stories in our top 10 where public institutions are kind of kowtowing to pressure from other organizations when somebody related with ID is invited to speak or be a part of something.
And I think it's worth noting that this whole witch hunt against Stein speaking at the University of Vermont was more or less inspired after P.Z. Myers blogged about it on Pharyngula about a year ago and said that it's a real slap in the face for the university to drag in this disgrace who has been a figurehead for a movement that is trying to replace science with superstition. And of course, it was after that, P.Z.'s followers on his blog then felt like they had to go ahead to protest to the University of Vermont in all of their intolerance, and eventually the president of the University University of Vermont caved in. And this is another situation where we really see that people who are discriminatory are really blind to their own prejudices. The president of the University of Vermont, Dan Fogel, said, "This is not, to my mind, an issue about academic freedom." But, I mean, the very fact that he refuses to give an honorary degree to a scholar because that scholar supports ID, or refuses to permit that scholar to speak at his university because of that scholar's support for ID, I mean, this is clearly an issue of academic freedom, and it's very unfortunate. I mean, if you can't even invite someone like Ben Stein, you know, who has been a very prominent voice in the public sector on many different issues, you know, if you can't even invite someone like that to speak at your commencement just because he happens to disagree with Darwinism, I mean, what sort of academic freedom do ID proponents have in the academy? This is a very disconcerting story. We should not take it lightly, I think. And you have some interesting details in your press release, Dennis, to talk about how the University of Vermont has had some very controversial speakers over the years for its commencement, but apparently supporting ID is even more controversial than being an advisor to the Zapatista National Liberation Army. So I encourage our listeners to actually go and read the press release on the ARN website at arn.org/top10 to get some of these details.
Our press release is a PDF you can download, and it's got links to all these related stories, so you can really dig down and read some of the original press releases and original sources behind these stories. And in the case of Ben Stein, I just want to say that the University of Vermont had invited him a year or two before that to come speak for some event, and it was a great success. And so it's not like he was an unknown quantity. He had been there previously and was warmly welcomed there. But it's just because he spoke out on an issue and they caved into the pressure. That's just a shame.
The difference is the last time he had been there, he hadn't yet become a spokesperson in favor of academic freedom for intelligent design.
Right. Let's
move on to your number 8 story, which is that a federal court dismisses a lawsuit by an evolutionist who was alleging discrimination in Texas. What can you tell us about this story, Dennis?
Well, this was Chris Comer, who was the Texas State Science Curriculum Director, and Chris had used her position to say some things against the intelligent design, and that's not allowed by public policy. But it turns out that that was just one of 8 separate incidences of insubordination and misconduct by the part of Chris Comer, and she says she was fired. Others say she resigned under pressure, but it was obvious that she had a long history of issues with the state there, and she was not fired for her beliefs about Darwinism, but because she couldn't follow the policy of her own department.
And I want to make a note about this little story here. This has always been a suspicious story to me, largely because it came out and received a lot of media attention right around the time that Expelled came out. So you've got, you know, a lot of attention being given to legitimate stories of persecution against ID proponents. And suddenly there's this interesting story coming out of Texas that this staff member within the Texas Education Agency was allegedly fired because she opposed the teaching of creationism. And none of that is true. She wasn't fired, and the Texas Education Agency did not support the teaching of creationism. But what's always been interesting to me is how the New York Times immediately latched onto this story and wrote a glowing article telling basically just her side of the story, but yet they ignored stories about Richard Sternberg or Guillermo Gonzalez, legitimate stories where ID proponents are being persecuted. And in this particular case, when you actually dig into the details, and Texans for Better Science Education, my understanding is they did a public documents request. It was not hard to do the kind of things that journalists are supposed to do when investigating a story, but apparently the New York Times didn't do any of that. They just wrote Chris Comer's side of the story and published it. They didn't look into it and find out that she had a history of being cited for insubordination and misconduct, and that there were a whole bunch of factors that went into her basically being asked to resign at the Texas Education Agency, and this federal judge saw right through the case. It was not a case where the Texas Education Agency somehow supported teaching creationism. Their policy required their staff to remain neutral on any unsettled curricular matters, and Chris Comer was going out and trying to tell people how to deal with the teaching of evolution and trying to advise them on how to deal with that when that was an issue that was directly before the board at that time, and it was an unsettled curricular issue. And she was going out and injecting her opinion on that topic, and she'd actually broken that very rule on other issues as well. This was actually an ongoing problem for Chris Comer at the Texas Education Agency, that she would speak out in areas that were outside the scope of her work or in areas that were really not her domain. And so this was an ongoing problem, not just in the field and the area of evolution. And no one at the Texas Education Agency was saying that you should be teaching creationism. This clearly was, in my opinion, a very frivolous lawsuit. And I think the judge saw right through it and really said that the neutrality policy of the Texas Education Agency, it was not a policy that required everybody to remain neutral on creationism. It was a policy that said you can't go around advising teachers on how to handle curricular issues when the Texas State Board has not yet decided that issue. And this was not an issue of creationism. It was an issue of how to teach evolution. And Chris Comer had been speaking out on issues she wasn't supposed to speak out on for a long time. This was nothing new. And this was basically just the straw that broke the camel's back. So I think somebody from Texans for Better Science Education said it really well, which is that if the Texas evolution lobby wanted to find a martyr for their cause, they basically picked the wrong case, because Chris Comer had a long history of insubordination and misconduct at the Texas Education Agency. And by the way, the NCSE on its website responding to Expelled posts a whole movie about Chris Comer telling her side of the story but disclosing nothing about her history of misconduct and insubordination. Let's go on to another individual who was legitimately expelled this time, Michael Behe, who was expelled from the website Blogging Heads. I don't actually know a lot about this story personally, Dennis, so can you tell us this story here?
Yeah, Blogging Heads is just another internet website. This one, they're known for doing reviews and interviews and dealing with controversial issues. They have a pretty open-minded policy on presenting different viewpoints. And at their website, bloggingheads.tv, there was an interview on August 26th last year between John McWhorter and Michael Behe about his recent book, The Edge of Evolution. And that interview appeared on the Blogging Heads website for a couple hours, and suddenly it disappeared. And it disappeared with a little message that was supposedly from McWhorter, who did the interview. And it said, the author feels with regret that this interview represents neither himself nor Professor Behe nor Blogging Heads usefully, takes full responsibility for the same, and is asked to be taken down from the site. He apologizes to all who found the airing objectionable. So I don't know how an interview with an author can be objectionable, but they found some kind of reason to censor the thing. And I don't even know if the author was involved, or John McWhorter, or whether he got flack and asked Blogging Heads to take it down. We're still not clear on that. But our understanding is that the chief editor of the website was gone at the time this decision was made. And when he returned, he got involved and said, no, you know, we pride ourselves in a diversity of viewpoints, and we're going to put this back up. So it was down for several days, but then it reappeared. So in this case, we want to congratulate Blogging Heads for rethinking their position and taking a stand. And I think that's what organizations like this are going to have to do, because as we've seen from the Vermont stories and other stories, there's going to be public pressure when this issue is addressed in a fair way.
And Dennis, you might know more about this than I do, but it was my understanding that actually a number of leading evolutionist academics actually supported Michael Behe being expelled from Blogging Heads, and some of them even spoke out against Blogging Heads for reinstating the interview, and they really didn't like the fact that Behe was even giving a voice to speak in an interview on this website. So is that true? And if it is true, I mean, what does that say about the tolerance and the mindset of these leading evolutionist academics?
It's just a sign of gross intolerance, and that's what the whole liberal education is supposed to be about, you know, allowing different viewpoints and using critical thinking skills to think through various viewpoints, not being sheep-herded into just one particular viewpoint on an issue. And so I think it just goes against the whole, you know, educational vein in this country of academic freedom and freedom of choice and allowing multiple viewpoints on controversial issues.
Okay, well, let's go to your number six media story, and this is one where perhaps I can speak about it a little bit. This was at the California Science Center was sued over the cancellation of a screening for the new ID documentary, Darwin's Dilemma. Why don't you go ahead and start it off, Dennis, and I'll play clean up
here
on this one.
I'll let you jump in since we quote you on this one. And rather than quote you, I'll let you quote yourself.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I'll just read my quotes.
The American Freedom Alliance was a nonprofit group that, because of the Darwin bicentennial, they'd set up an event in Southern California, and they were going to have the screening of an ID movie, Darwin's Dilemma, that looks at fossil evidence in the geological time frame. And then they had an evolutionary type movie that they're going to show with that. So they had kind of a balance of movies that they're going to show on their event. And after they had scheduled the showing of this at the California Science Center, which is a government-run facility, the Science Center received some pressure from colleagues at Smithsonian Institute and University of Southern California, Huntington's Library, and elsewhere, and they called and canceled the event. And so there's a, because this is a government facility and they open it to any group that wants to use it, for them to say one group can use it and one can't is a gross violation of free speech rights. And that's maybe what you can elaborate on for us.
Well, yeah, that's absolutely right, Dennis. Basically, there's a doctrine called viewpoint discrimination, which says that if the government is going to rent out its facilities or allow private groups to use their facilities, it cannot discriminate against who can rent those facilities on the basis of the viewpoint that's going to be expressed. So if I was going to rent out a facility to say that Cheerios is the best breakfast cereal and the government let me rent it out, but then they refuse to rent the same facility out to a group that wants to say that Frosted Flakes is the best breakfast cereal, then that might be evidence of viewpoint discrimination. And in this case, the California Science Center has a long history of hosting and sponsoring pro-evolution events, but as soon as they catch wind that there is a pro-ID event going on, it seems like they don't want that to happen. And there was a lot of evidence in this case that the Smithsonian Institution actually probably stepped in and pressured the California Science Center, because the California Science Center is an affiliate of the Smithsonian, and said that we don't want any affiliation with this event. So there's evidence here that the California Science Center basically caved into pressure, and whether they were asked to actually go as far as to cancel the event, that's what they decided to do. And unfortunately, that meant that the pro-ID viewpoint was not allowed to be expressed at this government-operated science museum in Los Angeles. Now, the other part of this story is that in October of last year, we actually filed a public documents request on the California Science Center. Basically, the California Science Center, since it is a publicly operated institution, there is a law in California called the Public Records Act that says that the public has the right to know how taxpayer money is being spent. And so we filed a public documents request asking for information and documentation about why this event was canceled. And what we got back was a very thin stack of documents that we knew was missing documents that should have been disclosed. And so the Discovery Institute has actually filed a separate action against the California Science Center, and it's alleging that the California Science Center, in fact, withheld documents that should have been disclosed in response to our Public Records Act request. And basically, this shows that they're trying to suppress evidence of their viewpoint discrimination against intelligent design. Well, Dennis, you know, as we're going through these stories, I'm seeing a theme, and that is basically that almost every one of these stories has to do with academic freedom, and how in the year of 2009, we're still seeing that ID proponents do not have full academic freedom. They don't have academic freedom to rent a government auditorium to show a pro-ID video. They don't have academic freedom simply to go online and have an interview with them posted at a website called Blogging Heads. They don't have academic freedom to go to a university and give a commencement speech or receive an honorary degree. So this is very disconcerting. I mean, if you can't give a commencement speech if you're pro-ID at a university, or you can't have an interview posted on a website, or you can't rent out a government auditorium to show a pro-ID video, I mean, imagine the kind of obstacles that ID proponents face in the academy to get their research published or taken seriously by other scientists. I mean, we are a long ways, based upon just these first few stories, from seeing full academic freedom for ID proponents. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, I agree with that, Casey. I do want to encourage your listeners, though, that we do have some more positive stories in when we get to the top five, talking about how at least one scientist was treated right, and also some public policies that were passed to help stop this kind of discrimination. But I think it's true that viewpoint discrimination is alive and well in this country when it comes to the issue of challenging Darwinism.
I think you're right, Dennis. And we'll get to those top five Darwin and Design media stories for 2009 in a forthcoming podcast. So thanks for your time, Dennis. We look forward to talking to you more about this in the future.
Thanks, Casey, and look forward to talking about the other five stories shortly.
I'm Casey Luskin with the ID the Future podcast. Stay tuned for more on the top five Darwin and Design media stories for 2009. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.